Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
America, welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. It's been more than 10 years since a horrific hurricane attacked New Orleans. Many of us know Hurricane Katrina. Many of us have forgotten about what happened. But at a time when the Black Lives Matter movement is growing, at a time when people are focused on police being racist and stopping blacks at a rate seven times that of what they stop whites and talking about police violence. There's another kind of violence that comes from officials that's got nothing to do with the police. And it has to do with the response to people in need. And I'm not just talking about response to poor people. I'm talking about a response to everyone. In New Orleans, outside of the lower Ninth Ward, things are humming. New Orleans is back in business. The French Quarter is doing well. That's where all the tourists go. But also a number of white neighborhoods are also doing well. White neighborhoods that actually are at elevations lower than the lower Ninth Ward. When the lower Ninth Ward, which is 98% black, was engulfed by Hurricane Katrina, and a number of white areas were as well, there was a huge difference in the build back. Everyone rushed to rebuild the white areas, even the middle-class black areas. But the poor black lower Ninth Ward, politician after politician talked about just letting it die, letting it stay inundated, not rebuilding there, even though it wasn't the lowest level. But it was the poorest level. The lower Ninth Ward was the last to get electricity back, the last to get water back. People were kept from school for months on end. It seemed that the politicians in New Orleans just didn't want all those poor people in their city. You know how poor people are. They need to eat. They need homes. That costs the city money. Much better just to let the floods clean them out, kill hundreds of them, maybe 1,000, and then displace the others. No poor people, no problem. No poor black people. No problem. My guest coming up in a bit has written about this. His name is Gary Rivlin. He's an investigative fund reporting fellow at the Nation Institute, former reporter for the New York Times. His latest book is Katrina After the Flood. And what he writes in really detailed articles, and you're really going to enjoy hearing from him in just a minute, is he makes clear that this isn't an issue of, well, the lowest lying property has to go. Or the part that costs the most to fix has to go. There are reasons why policymakers might make hard choices over which citizens to save and which ones to let go in a crisis. Or which citizens' homes to save and which citizens' homes to let go. And there are politicians who said silly things, like the press secretary for New Orleans, Mayor Mitch Landrieu, who said that, well, you know, there's a lack of home ownership in the lower Ninth Ward. That's why they're not coming back. They're all renters. Turns out that even though this was a working poor community, where people were making $16,000 a year or so, actually these working class people did have jobs, and most of them, many of them, had homes. It wasn't a question of home ownership. It was a question of the fact that people didn't want poor black people in the city. And it's hard to come up with another reason why. After all, there were other parts of the city, larger areas than the lower Ninth Ward, which really isn't that big an area. It's like 20 blocks by 25 blocks. It's a very distinct area. You cross a bridge. Always seems these poor areas are over a bridge. You cross a bridge to get to the rest of New Orleans. But there are areas that are much larger, where the land was much lower, where the flooding was much worse, where people were able to rebuild their homes. Yes, they were white areas or middle class areas, black middle class, white middle class, even white lower class. So what is it about the lower Ninth Ward that makes it special? What could explain this other than racism? And how is it that New Orleans officials, most of whom are black, are allowing this to happen? Now, to be fair, Louisiana isn't. And the people that were in control of the lower Ninth Ward were largely people outside of New Orleans, folks in the state capital of Baton Rouge, making live or die decisions about this ward and how it is that houses would be rebuilt or schools would be restarted. Again, Gary Rivlin has all the answers on this, and I'll be talking with him in just a minute. But I want you to think, as I have this interview with him, I want you to think about the differences. Because there are people who think that, oh, Black Lives Matter is just some silly group of black people acting up, and that all lives matter, of course, and why are people focusing on black lives? Well, the reason they're focusing on black lives, in a different context, to be sure, the context of police violence, is because it's not that people don't think all lives matter. We all know all lives matter. It's because there's been this implicit assumption that black lives don't matter. You have to say black lives matter not better than white lives, but because black lives have been ignored. Because the police seem to think all too often that black lives don't count. And when you look outside the police, and that's why I really like this Katrina example. Like is the wrong word, but I'm glad to bring it to your attention. Because the Katrina example shows that this isn't just a case of police training. This is a case of policymakers doing their best to purposely discriminate against black people, and particularly poor black people in America. They're simply unwanted. And rather than work to train poor black people, or poor people of any kind, to get a better education, to get a better job, to live the American dream, to rise up in society, to give them a chance, to give their kids a chance, even if you give up on the adults. All too many policymakers are eager to write them off. And when a flood comes, a once-in-a-century flood comes, and wipes out, yes, the Lower Ninth Ward, but also much of the rest of New Orleans, it's a case study where we see how it is that the other neighborhoods are rebuilt, but the Lower Ninth Ward is not. And so for all of you who think there's no racism in America or it's all gone, or for all of you that don't think that people in poverty are mistreated, the people that the Wall Street Journal called lucky duckies because they didn't have the extra 3% tax increase on those making over $1 million that President Obama imposed, those lucky duckies that have no home and no school, who are surviving hand to mouth, all those people who get all that welfare benefits, you know, things like $4 a day to eat. Lest you think that they've got it all good, you need to know that even after a great, highly publicized tragedy, where everyone you'd think was watching, this kind of racism and, frankly, anti-poverty, anti-poor people discrimination is continuing right under our noses. When I come back, Gary Rivlin, right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about Hurricane Katrina more than 10 years after the fact, but specifically what happened to the Lower Ninth Ward after the flood. The guest I'm about to speak with is Gary Rivlin. His latest book is Katrina After the Flood, published by Simon & Schuster, available at Amazon.com. He's an investigative fund reporting fellow at the Nation Institute, a former reporter for the New York Times, and he's written at length on what happened to the Lower Ninth Ward after the flood. Gary Rivlin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark.
So the basic point of your argument, as I understand it, is that the Lower Ninth Ward was not the lowest in elevation area of New Orleans, nor the worst hit But nevertheless, this area, which is 98% black and one of the poorest wards of New Orleans, was basically written off by politicians and not rebuilt for, well, it still isn't being rebuilt because politicians wrote off the Lower Ninth Ward.
Right. I would say they delayed the rebuilding of the Lower Ninth Ward, that it was a, you know, the city started devoting resources years after other parts of the city, in large part because of a misunderstanding about the Lower Ninth Ward. In fact, there is a corner of the Lower Ninth Ward that was harder hit, I would say, than any other part of New Orleans. 80% of the city was covered in water, but this corner of the Lower Ninth Ward, there was a bad levee breach, and it just decimated blocks and blocks of homes. Not knocked them into the middle of the street, home on top of home, splintered a bunch of homes. It's just the rest of the Lower Ninth Ward looked like the rest of flooded New Orleans, and yet it was treated as a whole.
Pictures from the area near this broken levee, which is what? 10% of the Lower Ninth Ward, 20%. What are we talking about?
Yeah, that's actually somewhere between those two numbers, I'd say.
Between 10 and 20%. So everyone saw those pictures and thought the entire Lower Ninth Ward was that bad.
Exactly. And you know, that includes the mayor of the city at the time, Ray Nagin. He mistakenly said, a couple of weeks after the storm, "Oh, we can't rebuild the Lower Ninth Ward. It's the lowest lying part of the city." That's just not true. Half the Lower Ninth Ward is above sea level and not even included in the flood zone. You know, there's
so the mayor of New Orleans didn't know his own city.
Correct.
And you point out that there's some white areas and some middle-class black areas that are actually lower than sea level and lower than a whole chunk of the Lower Ninth Ward.
Right. So pieces of the Lower Ninth Ward are, in fact, below sea level. But in New Orleans East, a black middle-class, black professional-class community, there are parts that are, you know, 8, 10, or more feet below sea level, lower-lying than the Lower Ninth Ward. Lakeview, a prosperous white community, much of it is lower-lying than the Lower Ninth Ward. But they were treated differently. So I don't know if people recall, but the city was basically on lockdown for those first weeks after the storm, and you couldn't get to the flooded areas, well, at first because they were flooded, but even after the waters receded, there was a delay in letting people back. But the mayor reopened Lakeview about 4 or 5 weeks after Katrina. He reopened New Orleans East 4 or 5 weeks after Katrina. But the Lower Ninth Ward, 4 months after Katrina, still had National Guard soldiers with rifles in their hands, not permitting any res. It didn't make a difference if you showed a driver's license and said, "I just want to see my house. I want to get grandma's jewels to see if maybe they survived the flood." It wasn't until December 1st, 4 months and a few days after the storm, that finally they allowed people back into the Lower Ninth Ward. And by the way, and then 2 weeks later, there are all these bulldozer announced. We're gonna bulldoze your home because it was too badly damaged, and many of them, in fact, did need to be bulldozed. But people just wanted a chance to, like, sift through the wreckage and see if there's something, anything they might salvage before the city decided to just wipe it away and get rid of all their possessions.
Well, wouldn't the president have been in charge of the National Guard, President George W. Bush, or was this a gubernatorial decision, the governor of Louisiana, or was it Mayor Ray Nagin?
Mayor Ray Nagin. He had a schedule. City Hall had a schedule, which made sense for reopening the flooded parts of the city. So he was the one who announced it would not be open until December 1st.
Had he not visited it for those 4 months?
I don't know if he himself. I know people in his administration had visited the Lower Ninth Ward. I think the thing to understand about the Lower Ninth Ward in the context of New Orleans. So in the 1920s, a canal was built. A man-made canal was built through the Ninth Ward, creating a Lower Ninth Ward and an Upper Ninth Ward. But somehow, in people's head, lower means, you know, elevation, not geography.
Right.
And there's
lower actually means south of.
Like Lower Manhattan, you know,
yeah.
The lower 48 states,
right.
Or whatever.
Okay, means south of. Okay.
Yeah, south of. And so these bridges set the lower ninth ward apart from the rest of the city. It's not just one neighborhood among many. I would argue that it's just a different place. It's a little bit more country, a little bit more Mississippi, countrified, where, you know, people are raising chickens and fishing for their dinner, and they're not the night owl partiers that people might think of when they think of kind of folks from
the French Quarter,
New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned there was a New Orleans East, which is a middle class black neighborhood, and then the prosperous white neighborhood, Lakeview. I'm just curious to know how much of this is bluntly racism, and how much of it is what we might call, and actually I need a good word for this. Maybe you can help me. What do you call poorism or socioeconomic discrimination?
Well,
we need a good word for it.
Is it race or is it class?
Well, classism, I guess we'll call it. I'm curious to know whether there were any poor white areas of New Orleans that were devastated by Katrina and how they fared.
Right. So the easy answer to that is no, not really.
Okay.
There's St. Bernard Parish, which is the parish, the county, just south and east of New Orleans. In fact, it borders the lower ninth ward. It was 100% covered in water. And, you know, it's more working class, middle class. Every single home there was flooded. And, you know, people in the lower ninth ward are very resentful because, first off, the St. Bernard Parish opened well before.
In St. Bernard Parish, what's the racial mixture there, just to get an
white
idea? It's white. Okay. So a working class white area had its area opened that was more devastated than the lower ninth ward and had its area opened months before the lower ninth ward.
Right, I would say just as devastated. They got hit by the same floodwaters because they border each other. But, you know, the same kind of scene if you were down there. You saw a car in a tree. You saw a car in the middle of a house. Cars in the middle of the block. Homes in the middle of the block destroyed. And, you know, the resentment there is that, you know, 10 years later, you see St. Bernard Parish, and I don't understand as well as I understand New Orleans. I focus on New Orleans in this book. But it's, you know, 80, 90, 100% back. You really wouldn't know that there was this bad flood 10 years later when you drive around. The lower ninth ward, you are painfully aware that there was this flood 10 years earlier. You could go several blocks and see no homes. Blocks that used to be full of homes, now it's just empty lot after empty lot after empty lot, overgrown weeds. You see an occasional slab or a staircase to nowhere. And, you know, there's I'd say half the lower ninth ward. There might be one or two houses per home, and that's really about it.
So poor white areas are rebuilt. Middle-class black areas are rebuilt. Middle-class white areas, of course, are rebuilt. But poor black area, lower ninth ward, was written off for dead by a black mayor who I don't know where Ray Nagin – I mean, I know he's no longer mayor. I don't know where he got his support. But did he used to get support from the lower ninth ward? Why politically – we got to take a break, Gary. But when we come back, I want to know why politically – would a black mayor of a majority black city completely discount a poor black area of his city? I get racism. I get classism. Explain to me the politics of it all. Is it that these people didn't vote? Is it that if they're out of their homes, they can't vote because they're all living in Texas or somewhere else? Why was this particular neighborhood so brutally ignored? We'll be right back with Gary Rivlin right after this. When the lower ninth ward of New Orleans was devastated, when the levees broke and we saw a lot of poor black people on their houses, on the roofs of their houses, looking for aid, we didn't see the 900 or so that died from the flood. But a lot of people thought, you know, Mother Nature is just, it's terrible. It's terrible that Mother Nature happened to harm the poorest, most black area of the city. It's just a shame. Maybe because poor people live in more low-lying areas because they can't afford the higher level areas, but it's just a shame that when these hurricanes attack, They attack the poorest among us, the ones without flood insurance, the ones who can't afford flood insurance, the ones who can't afford to rebuild. Well, Gary Rivlin, my guest today, and the author of Katrina After the Flood, argues that Mother Nature isn't so racist, that this wasn't a question of the storm just hitting the poorest area, but there was a systematic failure to rebuild by the authorities in New Orleans and in Louisiana of this poor black neighborhood. It's quite an allegation, but one that Gary Rivlin backs up in his book. Gary, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark.
Your argument is that policymakers made a deliberate choice to ignore the Lower Ninth Ward.
Right. There's limited funds, and they have to. They didn't have enough to spend everywhere in their minds. But I do want to amend one thing you said before the break.
Yeah.
The black middle. This is both race and class.
Right. No, I know. The black middle class neighborhood was rebuilt. I understand. It's poor black people.
No. The black middle class neighborhoods. They're still 10 years later. New Orleans East. The black professional class, middle class, is maybe 80% back.
Oh, it's not back either. I misunderstood you. Thank you for correcting me.
Yeah, you know, and you look at, you know, Pontchartrain Park, black middle class neighborhood, historic neighborhood in New Orleans, 60-70% back. So they're suffering, as opposed to Lakeview, the prosperous white community, which is 100% back, arguably better than it was.
So this isn't just classism. This is pure racism.
Right, but it is. You do pose a really interesting question. Black mayor Ray Nagin of
right.
a black majority city, 67% black. You know, why is it that he as mayor treated the Lower Ninth Ward different than other parts of the city? One thing to understand about Ray Nagin is that he was backed by the white business community. His backers were the Uptown Royals, that you know the shadow government, he came to call them because they turned on him after Katrina. But before Katrina, they were his main support. He got 84% of the black vote, of the white vote the first time he ran for mayor, and a minority of the black vote. So he was the white community's candidate. So let's understand that from him. But on the other hand, he's from a very modest background. His father was a bricklayer and eventually was a janitor at City Hall, which was part of his selling point. So he has very, very modest roots, but the Lower Ninth Ward, it was the last place to get water, the last place to get electricity in the city, the last place to get sewer. FEMA trailers started showing up in New Orleans 4 months, 5 months after Katrina, but not in the Lower Ninth Ward. They didn't show up until about 9, 10, 11 months after Katrina. And, you know, two things. One, the slower this community was to come back, the more it was a self-fulfilling prophecy, like, oh, they're not coming back, so why should we give them a school? Why should we spend money on street signs and street lights when there's 80% of our city underwater and there was unlimited need at that point? And second, a lot of decisions were being made in those first months about the recovery, and yet the residents of the Lower Ninth Ward are scattered around the country in, you know, FEMA camps and hotel rooms on the couches of relatives, wherever they might have landed, and didn't really quite have the means to come back to attend the meetings where their fate was being determined.
How much of this can be laid at the feet of Mayor Ray Nagin? How much of this decision, of these decisions, were made by him, and how much by state authorities or federal officials or President Bush or other leaders in the New Orleans area? Is it because Ray Nagin? I mean, let's be fair. I mean, this is a guy who's just been convicted of bribery and money laundering related to bribes before and after Hurricane Katrina. So it sounds like this guy might have been bought to help Lakeview at the expense of the Lower Ninth Ward.
Well, actually, what he was convicted of, all of which took place after Katrina, was for helping his sons in a business that he owned with his sons. So it was actually more lining his pockets than.
So it
helping.
Didn't have anything to do with helping Lakeview at the expense of the Lower Ninth Ward.
No, he was thrown off overboard by the white power elite very, very quickly after Katrina. There were open comments made by well-known figures in the white community that this is our chance. In fact, someone famously told the Wall Street Journal, this city is going to change demographically and politically, two-thirds black, black-run city.
Well, demographically, they didn't want the blacks to come back. I mean,
There was a concerted effort to make sure that the city, they would use the word, they wanted a less poor city. They would never say, we want a less black city. The way it was expressed was a less poor city. And on top of that, you know, there were just policies that were put into place that thwarted lower income blacks from coming back. The best example is public housing. There was the Big Four, they call it here, the four largest public housing projects. They kept shuttered forever. The Big Four, even those that didn't get any water, eventually it just...
That weren't damaged. They didn't reopen the public housing, even the one that wasn't damaged.
Exactly.
Because they didn't want them back.
And that's Ray Nagin, and that was a black majority city council that did it then. It's like, you know, there really is this sense, like in New Orleans East, it's a prosperous neighborhood, but there was a lot of Section 8 scattered site housing. After the storm, one of the main focuses of people out in New Orleans East was, we want to get rid of the Section 8 housing. So we always have to understand that, you know, middle class people, professional class people are still thinking like middle or professional class people, black or white. I mean, there are differences, but there are similarities as well.
Now, Ray Nagin, as I recall, was reelected shortly after Hurricane Katrina, like the year later, I think it was.
Yeah, six or eight months.
Six or eight months later. Did the people who were exiled from the city because of the flood, were they allowed to vote? I mean, could the Lower Ninth Ward say we want our homes back by voting for a mayor, or were they in effect displaced and then they could even lost their right to vote?
Well, the answer is somewhere in between. There was a big effort locally that the Secretary of State, a white man, backed to make it really easy to have satellite voting. Let's have satellite voting places scattered around the state of Louisiana and in Houston and Atlanta and other places where there was a large concentration of evacuees.
So they could vote.
But that was thwarted. That was thwarted. That was opposed by the conservative elements here in Louisiana. On top of that,
what a great way to get rid of poor people. First, you kill as many as you can. Then you don't save the other ones that you can save on their roofs. Then after they're gone, you destroy their homes. You don't let them come back to schools. You don't give them any money to rebuild their homes because they were poor to begin with. And you don't let them vote to stop you from doing it, even though you did it while they were still there. This is all, I guess, completely legal, but really, really gross. I mean, really gross.
And a very effective strategy. You know, today, 10 years later, in a city of 450,000 before Katrina, there are 100,000 less African Americans living in New Orleans today than before Katrina. The expression I heard walking around New Orleans at around the 10th anniversary was... Katrina devastated a black city, and this New Orleans built a white city in its place. And that's overstating things. It's still a majority black city, but it's less of a majority black city, and it's largely a white-controlled city. It was really a profound change, and you were putting it very well, that it was a concerted effort. People were allowed to vote, but it was a two-step absentee process. And in fact, the Secretary of State went to the federal government, went to FEMA, and said, we would like the addresses, any addresses you have for evacuees, where they end up, because we want to send them material saying, like, okay, here's how you can vote if you want to vote. And the federal government refused to do that. I mean, let's keep
way
in
to
mind,
go, George Bush.
Let's keep in mind, this was a purple state, right? This is, you know, it had a Democratic governor at the time, but it had been a Republican governor prior to that. Bobby Jindal, ostensibly running for president right now, took over. And
Mary Jindal, Landrieu was a Democrat. She lost. Of course, she had 100,000 less voters, I guess.
That's a good point. And in fact, that's kind of the point I was going to make. In 2002, Bobby Jindal was the Republican candidate and Kathleen Blanco was the Democrat, and she won by about 50,000 votes. You look at the election, it was actually 2003. You look at the election in 2007 when Jindal ran against a Democrat, there were 60,000 less black voters voting in that election than the 4 years before. And guess what? You know, that ended up making the difference. It was a rather effective plan, actually.
So where are the residents of the Lower Ninth Ward? I mean, you seem to suggest they've not just left New Orleans, they've left the state. Where are they?
So, I mean, let's keep one thing in mind. one of the main characters in my book has several daughters who are living in Houston, and they're still there because their life is better off. I mean, there are some people who didn't move back because they were frightened. You know, it's a traumatic event, and, you know, it is low-lying part of the country, and, you know, they just didn't want to have this experience again. There are other people who found a better job. Their kids were doing well in school, so they didn't move back because they made a choice. What bothers me are the policies that were made that thwarted people from coming back. There was never a plan to bring people back. One thing to keep in mind about FEMA is they give you a one-way ticket when you're rescued. So there are 50,000 or so people in New Orleans, trapped in New Orleans after the flood. They all got one-way tickets, and you're middle class.
Well, now, wait a minute. Superstorm Sandy hit a few years later, and FEMA was there. Did they also give the people in New Jersey one-way tickets, or did they get round trip?
No, that's the way FEMA works. Like, you know, let's give FEMA credit. They, you know, they saved a lot of people. It took them 5 or 6 days to show up at the Superdome or the convention center. But eventually, you know, they flew them to Houston, to Utah, around the country, and they paid vouchers. They paid for your hotel room. They subsidized your rent for a period. They set up FEMA camps. But there was never a plan for bringing people back. Another example, 54% of New Orleans at the time of the storm were renters. There was no attention paid to the renters. It was all on the homeowners. The renters were just on their own. And so, you know, this is another subtle, not so subtle way where they made it harder for people to come back. And, you know, any renter who's coming back had to confront this problem with so much housing damage. Rents soared. There was a study I saw that, you know, rents went up by almost 40% in that first year after Katrina. So it was a more expensive city they were trying to move back to. So there are all these ways that, you know, intentional or not, that, you know, made it harder for those who wanted to come back to come back.
Gary, how much of this is Ray Nagin and the city government, and how much is this the state of Louisiana or the federal government?
See, now, on the federal government, I just gave an example of the Bush
FEMA
administration thwarting free elections.
Right.
But, you know, anything bad you want to say about Bush and his administration around the botched rescue, I'm going to agree with. But actually, he had a terrible political problem on his hand. I mean, in retrospect, his presidency essentially ended after Katrina. He never regained the popularity he had. And so he had a political problem. Actually, he took on members of his own party to give extra billions of dollars to New Orleans. So I actually think I give the Bush administration pretty decent marks.
They didn't make decisions about the Lower Ninth Ward, the federal
government. Didn't make the decisions, but they here's a perfect example of a negative role the state of Louisiana played. Again, a Democrat, a moderate Democrat in Kathleen Blanco. So the Bush White House gives extra money to help housing. Road Home, the largest federal housing recovery program in U.S. history, a little over $10 billion. And the whole idea was, okay, people will get some insurance money. That might not be enough, so we'll make people whole up to $150,000 to help them rebuild. But they create the program based on the assessed value of your home, not the cost of rebuilding. And I think anyone listening knows that a home sells for more in a white community than a black community. So let's use numbers from the Lower Ninth Ward. I know them. Home is valued about $50 a square foot, $60 a square foot. Well, it costs you $100, $110 a square foot to rebuild. So Road Home comes in and they go to Lakeview and they say, oh, your home is worth $300,000. You got $200,000 in insurance. Here's your $100,000. And they have plenty of money to rebuild. Now let's go to the Lower Ninth Ward. Your home is only worth $70,000, let's say. And so you got $40,000 in flood insurance, maybe you had no flood insurance. You're going to get up to $70,000 from Road Home. Well, but my home is going to cost me $150,000, let's say, to rebuild. You don't have enough money to do it. So the whole program was based on the wrong thing. It wasn't the cost of rebuilding. It was the assessed value. And 5 years after Katrina, a federal judge ruled that this was a racially discriminatory
really?
Policy. But
so did they get more money then?
By that point, you know, of the $10 billion, there's only $150 million left. So the Obama administration did throw in an extra $500 million. But here was this $10.5 billion program, and for most of its life, most of the money was based on a formula that was biased against black homeowners.
We got to take a break, Gary. When we come back, I want to talk about the political aspects of all of this. We've seen today we have the Black Lives Matter movement. We have people arguing there is this systematic racism in government. And you've given a very clear life example of it. And yet, I got to tell you, there are plenty of white people out there, conservative people out there, that just don't see it. I want to talk about how to help them see it. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Gary Rivlin. He's an investigative fund reporting fellow at the Nation Institute, former reporter at the New York Times. His latest book is Katrina After the Flood, which you can find on Amazon. Gary, just a few minutes left, but it seems to me fascinating because what you describe in your book, particularly in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement, they're mostly focusing on police violence, but there's this argument that's being made all across America, particularly in conservative quarters, where they say it's not true that there's systemic racism, that, yeah, you know, police fight back when they're attacked and, you know, cities get flooded. Hey, you know, Lower Ninth Ward was low, so it was flooded. Your book is a real strong counter-argument to this narrative, basically making clear that policymakers, even black policymakers, are systematically discriminating against black people and against poor people. And I'm curious to know if there are others who are making this argument, or are you kind of out there and alone in this?
No, Melissa Harris Perry and James Perry, her husband, who ran for mayor of New Orleans in 2010, lost. They have an article of The Nation, the same issue where I have my Lower Ninth article, making the argument that the Black Lives Matter movement started in New Orleans 10 years ago. I mean, remember, the whole world saw the images, the stark images of the poverty here, the people trapped and desperate. George Bush came to New Orleans 2 weeks after Katrina and gave a speech that could have been Elizabeth Warren, talking about the way that the system historically has hurt the poor and African Americans. It's an extraordinary
speech. Is that the one where he brought in all those massive electric lights, all that infrastructure, so that he could be filmed there?
And then took it away the next day, breaking the hearts of the people of the city.
Who wanted to have those emergency generators to themselves.
Exactly. It was preposterous. You fly this stuff in. Hey, by the way, we're desperate for generators here. But, you know, so there was this moment, you know, where the country, the world, understood. It was just a stark view of the disparity that we have. So, you know, they put forward that argument. I always think is the black lives don't matter examples that they're giving. And, you know, you just – every moment of the New Orleans story and the rebuilding of New Orleans after Katrina, I think, is part and parcel of what's going on here, except for the focus, as you suggest, is more on economic disparity and racially discriminatory policy.
But here's what I find so interesting in your description. So, you know, I understand classism. We need a better word for it. We need like a more – like racist has this strong, you know, sound to it. I need to find a stronger word for classist, but we'll think of one. But it was fascinating to me was because I didn't see it, clearly – maybe I didn't read everything that you wrote, but about St. Bernard Parish, that this isn't just an issue of the poor get shafted, which happens all the time in America, and the middle class surviving. You find the middle class white neighborhoods did better than middle class black neighborhoods, and the poor white neighborhoods – did better than the poor black neighborhoods. In fact, St. Bernard Parish, I think you would say, did better than even East St. Louis. In other words, poor whites did better even than middle-class blacks. Is that right?
Exactly.
Got to go, Gary. But your point is made, and it's strong. His book is Katrina After the Flood. Go to Amazon and buy it. and let this be the counter-argument to all this conservative nonsense that somehow racism is over. This is Mark Levine. Hope you enjoyed the show. Check out my Twitter feed at Mark Levine Talk, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.